Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we are going to be talking about. All right, you just watched two different attacks, two different explosions. Which one of those killings is terrorism, and which one isn't? This is an incredibly important story that I'm going to take you through. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do it. All right, it's story time. Ready? I'm going to tell you a story, boys and girls. Gather around. Starting with something that happened back in the 1960s. Stay with me. This is when the French were at war with Algeria. The Algerians could hardly defend themselves, of course, except for guerrilla tactics, you know, small guns and stuff. While the French, at the time, they had one of the most sophisticated air forces in the entire world. So Algerian fighters would kill French military commanders by placing a bomb in a baby carriage. Yeah, a baby. They would stroll up with a baby carriage, pretending to be a mom or a dad, and then leave that baby carriage right outside one of those cafes where the top brass of the French military were eating and drinking, you know, right? Well, finally, a French top general caught the mastermind of the Algerian operation, and he said to him, "What are you doing, man? Why would you do that? Why would you use baby carriages to kill our soldiers? I mean, that's terrorism. You gotta stop that immediately," he said. You know what the Algerian rebel said? He said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. We'll turn over all our baby carriages to you, the French, when you turn over to us all of your fighter jets and your bombs that you're using to kill our people." Think about that for a minute. Think about it. Because I think about that all the time when I hear people use the word terrorism. What's terrorism? For example, the infamous October 7th Hamas attack, this one right here, that targeted civilians, it's often called terrorism. And as we look at these pictures, where there's no doubt this is indiscriminate killing, one could understand why, right? I mean, look at that. But now, let's wipe over to this one. Look at this video, which took place in the past 48 hours. These are Israelis killing Palestinian civilians, and this is called war, not terrorism. You can see just regular people living in Gaza carrying dead bodies, their friends, their brothers, their sisters, their moms. Apparently, there were between 90 to a couple hundred people killed just within the past 48 hours, right there, in those pictures you're seeing, right there. So here's the question. Here's the question. Why is one terrorism and the other is called war? War, terrorism, or war, terrorism. What's the difference? I mean, this is a question I find just perplexing. One that more often than not is determined by who is doing the killing and who is being killed. If the killer's on your side, right, then they're soldiers. If they're on the other side, then those guys over there, those guys are terrorists, right? So why am I asking this question? That has always somewhat befuddled me. And why on this day? Here's why. The BRICS nations are meeting as we speak right now in Russia, and they are addressing this topic head on, dealing with what they call the double standard of terrorism. This is interesting. I mean, I happen to think this is a fantastic conversation to have. Good for them. Let me read you what they've put out so far in a joint statement. Remember, these are all the foreign ministers of all these countries. BRICS nations' foreign ministers say they reaffirm their commitment to combating terrorism in all of its forms and manifestations. They reiterate that terrorism should not be associated with any religion, nationality, civilization, or ethnic group. The ministers called for zero tolerance to terrorism and rejected double standards in anti-terrorist activities. Double standards. By the way, they put that out on the same day, hear me out here, on the same day that the U.S. announced it's changing its classification of the Azov Brigade so they can now use NATO weapons. Think about this. The U.S. always considered the Azov Brigade bad guys, like terrorists. because they're literally neo-Nazis, self-declared, right? But because the U.S. now needs them to kill Russians, they're no longer the bad guys. So it was decided on this very day. You see what I mean, Manila? Do you get the point?
Well, Rick, okay, so what the BRICS leaders did here was not only a rebuke of the Western stranglehold on narrative control, but it tacitly does point out the hypocrisy that's applied when and where countries like the U.S. or members of the G7 use it, like the bombing of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Now, that should have been deemed an act of terrorism,
yes,
right, against a NATO member at that.
You think?
But it wasn't. But it wasn't, because while, you know, we all have a hunch at who the culprit is, it doesn't advance the goals or objectives of the West in this particular moment, or even individuals like Osama bin Laden. He was once a U.S. ally until he wasn't anymore. His ongoing activities, you know, since the 1980s weren't any different by the time they pinned 9/11 on him.
Mm-hmm.
But what changed was his usefulness to the narrative. So this unambiguous definition by BRICS, I think, is a welcome change, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to be able to figure it out. It may not be easy to figure out. You know what I think? I think it comes to a point. I had a professor once in Minnesota where I went to college who said that certain words, after a while, they use their usefulness because they are essentially overused, right? And mm-hmm. it comes a time when we should just throw them away and come up with a better word. I think we're almost at that point with terrorism. Seriously. I mean, because what the hell does it mean? Terrorism is the guy. Terrorism, like I said, is the act that I agree with. Or, pardon me, the act that I don't
yes.
agree with. And if I like it, then it's war. And if I like the person who did it, then it's patriot. But if I don't like it, then it's
exactly.
terrorism. And if I don't like the person who did it, then he's a terrorist. I mean, that's pretty much what we have right now. And that ain't right. That ain't right.
Exactly. But words are violence, Rick, remember.
Yeah, but you're right. The West controls that narrative more than others, except that's now changing. And we're seeing it changing. And that's what this BRICS conversation is all about. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. Okay, I want to talk about something else. This is a little crazy, but so there's this hit series. It's being seen by millions of people. You probably have seen it if you're listening to the sound of my voice. It's a hit series. It's being seen by people all over the world. It's called Baby Reindeer. This is a story about a woman that stalks a bartender. My wife and I got hooked on it, like maybe you did. And I got to tell you, it's magnificently done. The main character, an overweight, dowdy, but brilliant female stalker, is fascinating. She's got a law degree. Well, look, here's the trailer.
I really don't know where it's going to end. I think one of us is going to have to die now.
You say this woman's stalking you?
Yeah, like 6 months maybe.
Why'd it take you so long to report it?
I think she needs help. She comes to my work, my house. She sends me emails, like, all the time.
You're a comedian?
Sort of.
It's not going well.
So is that a question?
Somebody hurt you, didn't they? Who was it?
Martha, can you let go of my hand now, please? Martha, please let go!
Don't you dare!
Here's the thing about it. It is fascinating, but here's the story today. The real woman who the series is based on, she's now suing for $170 million. Why? The series, watched by already 50 million people and growing, they say when they start the series, apparently in the first episode, according to the demand, that it's a true story, that everything you're going to watch is true. But according to Fiona Harvey, the real Martha, it's not true. Her lawyers say she's not a convicted killer, she never spent 5 years in prison, and she never sexually assaulted this bartender dude you just saw there. Wow. I got so much to think about as I hear this. Manila, your thoughts?
Well, look, I got to be honest. It's on my watch list. I haven't gotten there. However, I do know the premise. I get the premise. But the point, I think, to this actual news part of it, the real life part, is we live in a litigious society. And this is yet another example of that. Her victim, I guess we can call him that for, you know, all intents and purposes, wrote a story about his life experience.
Mm-hmm.
Doing his due diligence, he changed names and you know, that sort of thing. he had every right to do so, both as a survivor, I guess we can say, but also in the way of creative expression and free speech.
Yeah.
Neither he nor Netflix outed who this woman was. She outed herself on the Piers Morgan show, and now she wants to scream victim somehow. I'm going to call BS on that one, and I'm going to say creative license, and it was based on the true story, not saying every event is true. It's not a documentary.
Well, here's where I'll disagree with you. Saying somebody is a convicted criminal and saying somebody spent 5 years in prison, the part about whether she had sex with a guy or not, whatever, deniability comes into play there. But the other two, I mean, if they're saying Netflix, you should have checked before you put that in the script or allowed that to be said, she may have a point on that. Wouldn't you agree?
No. I say full creative license. It's based on some of the things, elements of his life. So I think the guy has creative license, and I think she's going to flop on this one. This is a loser case, and I think she just wants 5 minutes of fame.
That's fascinating. I'm so glad that you brought your point of view to this. As usual, a smart one. Thank you. We're going to move on now, and I'm going to tell you who I'm going to be talking to in just a minute, because I think this is one of the most fascinating interviews that we're about to do. I think as Americans, we know squat about Ukraine. We don't. We know so little about what's really happened in Ukraine, except all of a sudden we woke up one day and we were involved in a war there with Russia fighting Ukraine, and we apparently are on one side, and every day we hear that we're going to be more and more involved in this. Well, there happens to be a particular person who used to be a diplomat inside Ukraine. And what's interesting about his position is that he's now come out and he's, I guess, what you would call a whistleblower in this case. And he's telling some truths that are making a lot of people extremely uncomfortable about what is going on right now. He is going to be joining us in just a little bit. In fact, you're going to be able to see him on the screen, and we are going to have a conversation with him. Stay with us. There he is. We'll be right back. Let's do this. This is an interview I've been looking forward to. As Americans, as I said, we all need to know a lot about Ukraine, but we don't know that much. Andrei Telyashenko, he knows a lot. He's a fascinating personality, fascinating person to interview to better understand Ukraine, past and present. He used to be a Ukrainian diplomat, so, I mean, he can tell it from the inside out. Andrei, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Thank you, Rick, for having me on. Great pleasure to be on the show.
Let's start with what we do know as Americans. We know that for some reason we've been very tied to Ukraine for the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. In fact, most people now would agree that we've been meddling in Ukraine. Can you take us through that? Can you confirm the United States has been meddling in Ukraine for quite some time and maybe explain to us why?
Yeah, that's the exact correct term, meddling into our Ukrainian business. The United States made a coup in Ukraine in 2014. There's a great article by Aaron Mate, who wrote about 10 years of meddling on U.S. meddling in the Ukraine government. And on based on my interview, if people can check it out. And it just recently came out a month ago. And it talks about how the coup was made by the U.S. government, how the so-called Maidan was to overthrow a legit president was made by the U.S. government. Then, after overthrowing that government, they placed in their people into the government. I was one of them. I was an advisor to the first deputy prime minister. I was an advisor to the prosecutor general. Then I was a diplomat in Washington from Ukraine. And I went through all that process and I saw the other side of that. And I saw what they were doing in my country. They were giving orders who to put in power, who to hire, who to fire, who to deal with, who to put a prison in. This is what America became for Ukraine, basically an owner. And they were having a puppet regime there and making decisions.
That's fascinating. So the U.S. government, my government, I mean, I love my country, but I'm not crazy about our leaders these days, especially. They installed in Ukraine a different group of people who would take their orders and execute them in Ukraine. And you were one of those people.
Yes, I was, because I was helping them overthrow the legit government at the time, which I, after that, I came out and told the truth in 2017, how Ukraine meddled in the U.S. elections throughout this whole process and political article. And then they went after me. I was in the White House. There was official White House logs. I was there officially numerous times as a government position and not as a government position, meeting with advisors of the Obama administration and the President of the United States. And then after, I came out with the truth on what they were doing in Ukraine, how they were using Ukraine to meddle in the elections, how they're using Ukraine to build up anti-Russia to fight this war today. They went after me and sanctioned me for being a Russian agent, a Russian spy, whatever they claim it is, which it's not.
We're all Russian spies right now. I mean, if you say anything against the United States or criticize any of our policies, you can come out and say, I love my country, but these politicians we have are kind of crazy. Ah, you must be a Russian spy. But here's what's interesting, and here's what I want to know more about. So this was all happening, to my reading, please correct me, I'm not an expert, you are. This was happening mostly during the Obama administration, when the guy who happened to be the vice president is the guy who's the president of the United States right now, Joe Biden. Some would say he was more affecting whatever was happening in Ukraine than even President Obama was at the time. It's like this was his baby, Biden, and the vote and those around him, right? Same people who are now running the State Department.
Yes, that's totally correct. Biden was the point man for Ukraine after the coup, and he was basically overseeing Ukraine and giving orders to the president of a country, a sovereign country, supposed to be, and giving orders on how to do business in Ukraine. Susan Rice knew about this. The Obama administration knew about it. They covered it all up. They just pushed away from this and say, oh, we have nothing to do with it. But they did. But Biden was the man who was making the bucks in Ukraine personally for himself as the big guy through his son, Hunter Biden. Mm. And I put him on the board of member of one of the gas companies, largest gas company in Ukraine, which was corrupt by 4 criminal cases. And I was advisor to the prosecutor general at the time when those cases were open under Shokin also. And I can tell you that he was dealing in Ukraine not only politics for the United States and making anti-Russia, but dealing his own personal benefits.
Let's, before we get into the Bidens, I want to ask you about Ukraine itself. I have read a million times that Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. That might be an exaggeration. Obviously, your enemies will always describe you as more. But just so let me just ask you for the record. You were there. You saw what was going on. The United States is corrupt, too, by the way, and so is Japan, and so is China, and so is Russia, and so are all countries. But how much more corrupt, maybe this is how I should frame the country, the question, how much more corrupt is Ukraine, and why?
Compared to the United States, in the United States, only the elites have the power to do the corruption.
Right.
In Ukraine, anybody in a low government position job can take a bribe from $5,000 up to $100,000 and up to a couple of million dollars. I got officially reported in, people came in and offered me bribes, $500,000, $700,000 to post criminal cases. And while I was in the prosecutor's office, I denied those bribes and I reported them, and those people were then investigated. But this is Ukraine. This is basically anybody who can come in, a business person, and can give you a bribe, a cash bribe, and offer you and to sell you something off. This is what's happening in Ukraine today. Everything is being sold off. That's what we're talking about. This war, what's happening during this war, all the money funneling going through Ukraine is being put into pockets different from different people in the United States and Ukraine. And this is how Ukraine works. Everything that's being sold to Ukraine and given to Ukraine is being sold off to different other countries. And weapons, everything was given by the West. So this is what Ukraine is. Unfortunately, my country is corrupt, and it became more corrupt after the coup, and it became more dangerous after the coup, because you had Nazism and fascism being built in a country. Anybody who could say that he likes Russia or wants to be friends with Russia because we have a long 100,000-year history with Russia, they're going to be put on trial as a traitor to their country, and they be shot. Some of my friends were shot after the war started by the Ukraine government. So this is what Ukraine is. It's a corrupt country with a regime which dislikes anybody who says that they want to have peace with their neighbors.
So if you want to, here's what I'm getting from what you're saying. I'm going to put this together. I'm going to add up these two and two and get four. If you want to be successful in Ukraine and you want to be a part of the system that happens to be corrupt, and you want to be able to make money in that corrupt system, you have to believe in Ukraine itself as an entity without Russia. The moment you go out and you say, we should be friends with Russia, after all, we've had a friendship, or we've been friends and enemies for the past 100,000 years or whatever it is, I'm exaggerating. But the moment you say that, you're locked out of that potential money-making opportunity, which is the corruption that is Ukraine. That's what I'm hearing you say.
That's totally correct. As soon as you come out and say that, as soon as you come out and say what America is doing in Ukraine is wrong, you become the traitor, you become the enemy, and you become the enemy not only to the American government, but to your own government for saying the truth. That is the problem. This is the truth. And where people are getting shot for this truth today, and this is why this war is happening, because they built this hatred toward the Russians and toward the Belarusians, the former Soviet countries within Ukraine so much. And this whole corruption, people are putting on Patriot flags, Ukrainian flags waving, but making money on the bloodshed of their own people. It's just crazy.
So let's talk Biden real quick. So all of this is going on. Ukraine happens to be a very corrupt place at the time, as you say, and others. You're not the only one. In steps Joe Biden and his son Hunter, and perhaps others around him, into that corrupt malaise. It's almost impossible for him to go in there and deal with people without dealing with people who are corrupt and maybe even being a part of that corruption himself. And that seems to be the picture that you and others have drawn. Although, to be fair to Mr. Biden, I've yet to see the smoking gun that shows me where exactly he took specific money. But nonetheless, take us through what you believe was going on at that time.
Look, there was a company, Burisma, which was formed under one of the former ministers who were under the former government of Ukraine, under the Yanukovych presidency. Mm-hmm. It was formed by a corrupt way. The license were given to the company by the minister himself, Vluchevsky, who was the minister of ecology and for gas development. Yeah. So the company was formed in a corrupt way. And Hunter Biden, after the coup, joins this board member, becomes a board member of this company. And he knows that this company is corrupt. Everybody knows that this company is corrupt because it's already in the news. There's four criminal cases opened onto this company, onto the owner of the company, Zochevsky. And Hunter Biden comes in and starts doing business and then starts helping them to take away that name of that they're being corrupt. And Biden himself fires the prosecutor because his son is on the board of the members of this company, because the prosecutor is investigating this company in the right way. I also advised for Blue Star Strategies, a company who coordinated the work for Hunter Biden on Burisma board. I was there on their side advising them, and they were asking me to communicate with the Prosecutor General's Office of Ukraine to help close their criminal case. And this was all done not only with the help of Blue Star Strategies, the company who was working with Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden himself, he didn't do anything. He doesn't know what he was doing. He's a drug addict.
And by the way, I know. Listen, so what you just described is malfeasance. What you just described is cronyism. What the hell is this kid doing on the board of some company? But you know what? Sorry to say this. It happens all the time. Rich people, powerful people get their kids to get jobs that they don't deserve. That's the case here, the corruption there. Taking that to somebody took an exact amount of money for an exact deed, that takes us to another level. So let's move to Zelensky, as we have a minute and a half left in the interview. When does Zelensky become corrupt? When does he go from being a comedian, a popular television figure, to being suddenly the president of the country, to now running a corrupt enterprise? Can you take me through that one in a minute?
he became a president on a peace deal. He said, I'm going to make peace with Russia and stop the war in eastern Ukraine, which has happened for 8 years. Then, after becoming the president of Ukraine, people like the oligarchs of Ukraine, take him to London and get him a meeting with the MI6. And after that, in June 2019, he becomes a puppet of the Western governments and sells his soul off to fight a war with Russia. In 2019, they knew there got to be a war with Russia. They were pushing for this war. That's when Zelensky becomes corrupt. After that, he becomes a billionaire. He was a millionaire before. Now he's a billionaire today because of all the corrupt schemes. And Joe Biden is his basically godfather in coordinating his work in Ukraine today through the military-industrial complex in Washington.
And they've been together ever since and continue to be, although Biden probably can't remember him anymore, given Biden's state. But certainly those guys in the State Department who work with him, they remember him very well, and they've had a relationship for a long time. Did you say billionaire?
Yes, he's now a billionaire, and he was a multimillionaire before as a comedian, as an actor. Now he's a billionaire.
A multimillionaire a multimillionaire for a comedy show as a comedian? Really?
Yeah, he used to make his money off oligarchs, representing to oligarchs around the country, going abroad for Ukrainian and Russian oligarchs, and he was one of the popular ones, and that's why people actually voted for him, because they thought somebody from the outside, not a politician, would come and make peace. But what? No, he sold off right away, and now he's accepted around the world because he has all that money, and that's the problem.
Unbelievable.
Dying in Ukraine and Russia.
Unbelievable. A guy who, by the way, has not been elected again, and he's canceled the election. So I guess we could almost say at this point he's a dictator. But I didn't say
he's
that.
He's not a legit president.
He's not. Well, he's not elected. There's no election. You got to have an election to say that you're an elected president. You also have to say that to be able to say that you're a democracy. But we're out of time. I'm going to get you back. Andrei Telesenko, you are a fascinating person to have a conversation with, a true insider. I know you get a lot of heat for everything you do and say, but I respect you. It seems to me that you are indeed a truth teller. Thank you, my friend, and God bless.
Thank you. God bless. Thank you.
That's our show. Well, remember to always look outside your own box when you're looking for truth, because, you know, we like to say that truths don't live in boxes, as you can see if you watch our show. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we will see you next time.